G, Wibble on the mic here, bringing you all the hits on your drive home from your stupid job. Coming up next, we have the Muck Pod, but stay tuned afterwards for 3 to 4 hours of me attempting to freestyle. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Muck Pod. Muck
Pod. Kia ora and Fulcher to the Muck Pod Community Podcast, where we talk to the talented people at Muck Puddy about what we do, how we do it, and what stuff that they're into.
Yeah, right, that'll be close enough.
I'm your host, Simon Crane. I'm an animator here at Muck Puddy, and with me, as usual...
Josh, and I'm also an animator, and our guest this week is our friend...
Am I saying his name?
That's right.
Joel, what's up?
It's Joel.
It's Jolly Molly. Hey.
Hooray, Jolly Molly. I mean, you know, let's say like D- on the intro, guys.
Right, yeah.
We'll try it again next week.
We'll fix it in post.
You know, this is actually our second episode with Joel.
Yes.
Because someone, let's not name names. I don't think pointing fingers gets us anywhere, but somebody goofed up and Joel's mic was not on for the entire
yeah,
episode.
I think that was Simon.
Right.
That was your job, Simon.
Yeah,
we told you, man.
I was being the mic and it turns out I'm not actually a microphone.
Right,
so,
right.
So...
Didn't work. I tried listening to it. We can hear Joel faintly in the background making wise cracks and laughing at his own jokes, but it's not the same. It's really not.
Yeah. You've got Audacity. There's a volume knob. Turn me up.
I don't think I could do that for like the 2 hour podcast that we recorded. So just know that there's a fantastic episode out there.
The last episode.
Yeah, the last
Joel episode.
It was really good.
Probably our best one, I'd say.
Easily our best one. Anyone that we record and lose, we say that was the greatest. That was the best one, you guys. You wouldn't believe how great it was.
Yeah.
But we've got him back. Thanks for coming back
and
giving us more of your time.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Joel's always a fun guest to have on.
Absolutely.
How are things getting on with work animation? What are you working on at the moment?
Do you mean Muck Buddy stuff? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're working on Night Eyes, season two?
No,
three.
Season one.
Season one.
This is the first one we've done.
Wait, really?
Yeah. How do you not know this?
I guess we've been taking breaks on and off different productions. So.
Yeah, we've kind of been switching back and forth productions.
Yeah, no, it is the first season.
Yeah.
I tell you what, that we worked on Dead Sea Squirrels for a month, and that just felt like forever. So
yeah, because they were long episodes.
Yeah, yeah, they're like what, 30 minutes long or something.
They're your standard like TV 22 minute thing, and yeah, it was a long production.
It's also cut up into a lot of little scenes as well, so it really seems like a hell of a huge workload.
It's different to what we're used to. We're used to doing pretty short form shows, and so you'll get 20-30 seconds worth of animation, whereas Dead Sea Squirrels you'd be getting like close to a minute, maybe more.
Yeah,
and so you'd finish one scene and feel like, based on your usual workload, you're like, well, I must be nearly done around the corner, and then you look at the task sheet and you're like, no, I got whole sequences left. I think that's why we've started juggling back and forth, so we'll have 1 week on Dead Sea Squirrels, another week on Night Eyes, it's definitely a challenge for production to like sort of start, stop, and put yourself, in the mindset of one show and then back into the mindset of another. But,
The only thing that really got me with that was that I was 2 days in, I was on Night Eyes first.
Mm.
And so we did two episodes of Night Eyes. I think Night Eyes is possibly my favorite show that I've ever worked on.
Really?
Like, I love it.
Great.
I can't wait for people to see it. But then I switched over to Dead Sea Squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like Dead Sea Squirrels. I think the voice work in it is good. I think it's quite funny.
I also felt that way when I first started, and I think Matt pointed out, like, are they good or are they just American? And those are the voices we're used to hearing come out of cartoons.
It is unusual to hear the American voices opposed to hearing Kiwi actors.
I think Merle is. He genuinely has made me laugh a few times as I'm working on it.
They're trying.
But
they're
the
trying
big
to make
difference,
it funny.
I think. From animating it is that Dead Sea or Night Eyes is on twos,
right?
Dead Sea is tweened.
Mm-hmm.
So I got in 2 days of Dead Sea animation all on twos,
right?
And then I just went.
I was the opposite. I did Night Eyes and tweened.
But that's easy to fix, right?
To make that opposite, mistake is.
Can you fix that by just selecting all those two frames and then just putting them tweening sending those all to tweet.
It fixes some of it, but then you have to go through it all again and sort of like join up shoulders.
The opposite is probably easier to fix, right? Because there is a button that will take a tweened animation and sit it on twos.
Yeah.
I'm so used to tweening, that's mostly what I do.
That's how I do it.
Unless the scene calls for like some sort of traditional animation, a lot of the stuff I do will be tweened, and then I'll just press the magic button that will turn it onto twos.
Yeah, but then you find after you've done that, then you kind of have to go through.
You do have to revise it.
Do your fixing and make it look better, make your hands work and all that sort of thing. So, yeah.
But you're enjoying it? Liking Night Eyes?
I love Night Eyes.
Yeah, and liking...
It's everything I love about a Muck Putty show.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Are you liking the actual like show aside from the animation?
Yeah, I mean, what I like most about the Muck Putty show is the short form. Like the Jandal Burns and the drawing shows, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So this is that, but then it's also got the horror element to it as well. This is living the dream pretty much.
Nice. Are you liking the animating on twos?
Yeah, I actually prefer it over using tweens. I feel like tweens gets a little bit finicky sometimes in Flash. A lot of stuff tends to break quite easily, but I think it takes a little bit longer to animate on twos, but I think it's more fun.
Yeah,
it looks better, I think. And it takes a little bit longer, but it's more engaging work. Like it feels more like animation.
It definitely definitely took a little bit of getting used to. I would find that lining everything up, because obviously in Flash everything is nested inside symbols, and sometimes I'd find, oh god, I haven't aligned these all the files right. So now what I do is I'll have my audio track that sits on top of everything, then I'll have another blank layer which I will set onto twos.
Yes.
And I copy that into all of my symbols so that everything is can be timed same.
So you know that you're doing like on every
every second
third frame or second frame.
It's odd numbers. It'll be 1, 3, five, 7.
That's right. That's it. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm having a lot of fun on it too. I just came back from my little trip away to Dunedin, and I have to say I was really glad to come back and work on Night Eyes.
Right.
Because I'd left on Dead Sea Squirrels, and again, the show is fine.
Yeah.
It's one of our what do you call them? Contract jobs, I suppose, that we do for someone else, not created in-house. But the length of the episode and the fact that it is tweened, it can get a bit repetitive.
Right.
You know, you're solving technical problems, you know, making sure that the tweens are all working the way they should.
Yeah.
Coming back and doing Night Eyes and playing around with these cute little critters, animating them on twos, a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is a fun show. Mm. And it, looks great as well.
It's
got, obviously, everything was designed in here in-house, so it's got that real Muck Putty style to it.
I think the episode you wrote this week was a lot of fun, too.
Thanks.
What was this episode?
It was a...
It's called The Blurred Witch.
Yeah. Ah, right. Cool. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I was lucky to be in the story meeting that they had to come up with the episodes for the season.
Is this the one that you wrote? Or was that the one you did last week?
The one that we're just finishing this week. The Blurred Witch is the one that I wrote.
That's your one. Oh, yeah. Excellent.
Yep. Very happy with it. People have said that it's spooky.
Yeah.
They said we might get some angry parents calling us about this one.
I tried to make it as scary as I could.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Excellent.
That's what I was going for.
Yeah.
Because I
spent hours working on it. Couldn't sleep all night long. Thinking about your own work.
So spooky. It's got one eye. Because I noticed that the Mucks are so good at comedy that a lot of the episodes that have come through the pipeline have lent toward comedy.
Mm.
You know, it's always a balance with horror comedy, but a lot of the episodes will have a revelation at the end, like Scooby-Doo, like this is what the ghost was, or maybe there was nothing spooky going on at all. It was just a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
So for my one, I was like, no, I want this to be a horrifying monster. They don't get to know what it is. They don't stop it. They just barely survive encountering it.
Oh,
and they leave.
It's like a Borg situation.
They have a mental breakdown at the end. And I enjoyed animating these two cute creatures shaking and shivering with bloodshot eyes.
Yeah, just drinking whiskey from the bottle.
Yeah. Joel also did the commercial that the characters are shooting at the beginning.
Okay.
And when Mike said that Joel was animating that, but I was like, perfect guy for the job.
Right.
All this real mugging to camera, I can't believe what I'm seeing, looking directly at the camera.
Yeah,
great stuff. Yeah. Joel does little you showed me a little bit where the character is looking slightly off camera as if they're looking at the person filming for direction.
Cool. Nice.
That's great. Nice touches.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
So should we talk a little bit about, seeing as we lost the last episode, should we talk about Joel's origins and Yeah. How you got here and
how I was
all
born.
That sort of stuff. Yeah, how you were born.
Now, how does that work?
Yeah.
Ask your parents.
Mom, how was I born?
How people were born in general.
Okay, all right. So you've always been interested in animation, and you went through the animation college system that we all went through.
I did.
And you say it was still called freelance when you went there.
When I was before I actually went to study there, and paid the money.
Yeah.
I went for a 1 week course when I was 14. So that was when it was still called freelance.
You saw It's a live commercial.
I loved that. I saw, I think the thing that because I've been watching Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon like every other kid does as a kid, but the first New Zealand animated short I saw was actually the Muck Putty guys, is a short Camp Fair.
Right.
Yes.
And that was all sort of done in Flash as well. And it was kind of similar to my style. A lot of animation I'd seen coming from New Zealand was too realistic or just not really my thing.
Yeah.
But that was the first cartoon I sort of saw. And I was just like, that can be done in New Zealand. That's not, I want to do that. So I learned that those guys went to animation college. And then I saw all the stuff from them. That was sort of like a wake-up call to be like,
and so I can do this too.
Were you doing, when you were in college, were you still doing your YouTube animation at that point?
No, or? I didn't start doing that. I was late to the game on that.
Oh, yeah, really?
Really late to the game, I think.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of kids start posting their animations at 16.
Yeah.
And they have 2 million followers or something. So I was really late, yeah.
Yeah. So when you were in animation college, I think we were talking about, they were still teaching traditional, mostly traditional animation.
Pencil and paper, light desks, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
I did that for about a year. And then I think I was the last, we were the last year group to get that. And then they canned it in our second year. And then a lot of people left because...
That's what they got rid of it.
Is that because Brotown had been cancelled at that point in the college?
No, it was well before that.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Simon, I'm pretty sure that Brotown was canned well before even I went.
I'm not that old.
Right, yeah. Okay,
I'm a youngin.
It is questionable that they were teaching so much traditional when there wasn't really that much happening.
Because isn't Brotown kind of the last of the traditional animation?
Yeah.
As far as I know, it's the last
animation.
Not just in New Zealand.
Maybe ever. No. There's definitely traditional.
I mean, there's anime and stuff like that. A lot of Studio Trigger, they're still doing pencil and paper to this day. They're hardly really ever doing a lot of digital. I think it's mostly cleanup. Not even cleanup, color. That's the only process that's digital. So
right.
And then obviously the editing and effects is all.
But anything that's TV animation, unless it's of a certain, super duper high budget, will be some form of rigged or digital animation. So I'm curious then, when did you start doing Flash animation? Did you self-teach or...?
Yeah, I tried to learn it. I remember working my crummy job, being a busboy for about 1 year and a half. And I was just like... And that's exhausting. That's 14-hour day job. So I didn't really have a lot of time to do pretty much anything.
Yeah.
Your life kind of is absorbed around that. And I was like, I'm getting sick of this, man. And I was a bit younger then. And I had a bit more fight in me to sort of... only get 2 hours of sleep and then do a 14-hour shift the next day. So I'd come home at midnight and I'd crack open YouTube and watch Harry Partridge.
Oh, yeah.
He's a traditional animator on YouTube, and he does his stuff looks really well-produced Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, it's crazy. His stuff is done in Flash, but it's not what you think of when you think Flash animation.
I think he uses Toon Boom. He uses this really weird hybrid now of Toon Boom. He does all the roughs in Flash, I think, and then he cleans it up and colors it in Toon Boom. Really, really bizarre, but whatever works, you know? And so he has a series of YouTube tutorials on how to do traditional animation and how to use Flash as well, and I booted that up, and I would just start learning that, and then... Yeah, I think shortly after that, the guy sent me a test to do for this job.
All right.
And it wasn't until I actually started working here that I actually knew the inside and out of Flash. Before then, I didn't really know that much at all. I was just drawing in Photoshop.
Right.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have been... So it was a short gap between graduating and starting here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say it's about 2 years. Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
after I finished studying.
Okay. Yeah, it's tough going out there, and it's impressive that you found the time and energy to teach yourself something new while you were working one of those crappy jobs.
I mean, let's say it I didn't age well from that.
Yeah. I had a slightly longer break between graduating and getting the job here because we both arrived here at basically the same time. And when I was working those crappy jobs in between, that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to be like, okay, I'm going to use the spare time that I have because it's a part-time job. But the energy just got sapped from serving customers all day and putting up with their petty little complaints. I can never go back.
Well, I was just like, I'm never going to make it out of here if I don't at least – like make a start. It wasn't necessarily I wasn't necessarily starting animation, but I was definitely drawing every day. Every day, all day. And because I knew that my work was shit, and I was just like, I can cuss on here, right? That's okay, that's right, I can.
You sure flipping can.
Sure fucking can, man. And so I was like yeah, I gotta get better at this because I suck. So and I like to think I got at least a little bit better by the time I started working here.
Thinking that you suck at something, that's just your passion sort of saying you just need to, like, you'll never be happy with your own work.
So yeah.
You're always trying to get better.
Yeah, right? For sure.
That's not being bad at it. That's just wanting it.
The carrot hanging in front of the pig that makes it move forward, right?
Yeah. You had a carrot.
Good to be honest with yourself.
Also, I do think as well that having those sort of busboy jobs is great motivation. Because you do sort of see.
No, it sucks. Yeah, I know. But that, I disagree with you. That's shit. I've never gone back.
It's the sucky part of it that makes you kind of go, like, you get trapped.
This
job, it doesn't pay very well. It's not inspiring. It's pain in the arse. I need to get a career.
Yeah.
Like, between studying and working in animation, I was a night porter in a hotel.
Oh, really?
Right, which is, like, you start at, I think 10 o'clock, maybe 11 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
And you finish at 9 o'clock in the morning. And like that's tough because like in a hotel, you're the only person there.
Right.
Right. So that you're taking bookings, you're getting people into their rooms.
Anyone who has a problem, you've got to sort it.
And then around 5 o'clock in the morning, you have to like build the dining room. Like
every time.
The lobby becomes the dining room, so you have to take out all the tables and chairs, and this is when you're tired,
mm-hmm.
right? Make the tables, and then you got to make the breakfast, right, for the whole hotel. And no staff shows up for, like, hours. Really
hard work. The porter makes the food?
In this hotel.
What the hell?
Yeah, it was, like, what they call, like, a continental breakfast, so there wasn't much cooking involved. Okay. There was eggs. You had to cook the eggs, but that was about it.
Okay.
That being said, though, there was lots and lots and lots of downtime hours when you're, like, I did a lot of reading, but when you've got, like, 5 hours every night where no one's going to show up and you're not going to see anybody,
right?
That's drawn time.
Yeah, I'd say the kick up my ass as well was when I got given the test to do for Muck Putty, and I don't know about you guys, but, I mean, I had no idea about puppeted animation at all because a lot of the animation we do is rigged. Mm-hmm. Based, so I thought I'm just going to have to draw a bunch of pictures.
Right.
Because I don't know, like I just didn't, I hadn't kept tabs on the guys for a while, and but they sent me the test to do, and I was like, I don't even know what I'm looking at.
That's crazy.
I can't do this, and I had a bunch of people tell me like, well, you know, like this is it. This is your shot to get out of where you're at. So, like
scary
learn.
Moment.
So I took a week off of work, and they hated me for it.
Yeah,
I was like, I might lose my job for this, but gotta do
but
it.
What and loyalty do you have to a crappy job?
Exactly. I mean, a lot of people were like, oh, you know, you did that to your job, and it's just like, well, they weren't treating me very nice anyway. To be fair, so and I have no problem saying that.
The hotel I worked in.
Don't do hospitality, kids.
Right,
I'm telling you,
the hotel I worked in was on the same street as the first animation studio that I worked
really?
In.
Really?
Right? Uh-huh. And so I got crazy. The job in the animation studio, and it was just luck in a way that it was, like I was saying, it was a friend of mine said, they're looking for a background guy, you should give them a call.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him a call. Jared was the guy, and he said, yeah, come in Monday. We'll get you on Photoshop, see what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to ring up the hotel because I was scheduled to work those nights of that week, and I said, hey, look, I'm after being given a good opportunity here. I could really do it the week off because this is career stuff.
Yeah.
And they said, nah.
Really?
So it was like, So I was like working during the night in the hotel and then getting up in the morning, just leaving the hotel in the morning. Usually I'd go home and get to sleep, but not up the road straight into the animation company. So that first week was just
hell.
I'll be honest with you. I slept a little on the job in the hotel because I was like, fuck these guys. When I think of all the extra hours I put in, fuck them.
My coming to Muck Putty story is that, it had been 5 years. And I was like, well, look, it doesn't look like this animation thing is going. Like, I'd done freelance jobs here and there, but it wasn't really doing it for me. So I was like, well, maybe I just settle down and get a real person job. So this recruiting agency found this place, Ecotricity. They do 100% renewable electricity is their thing. Like, well, if I'm going to work in an office, might as well work in an office job doing something that I, you know, approve of, that I like.
Right.
But I swear, I'm not good with numbers. I'm not good at math, and I'm not very organizational minded, but they just looked at me, looked at the way I dressed, looked at the shape of my skull, looked at the thickness of my glasses. They were like, this guy's smart. We're going to make you our apprentice pricing manager. So the pricing manager is the person who like determines the price of electricity for different regions across the country. The person they had doing that was really onto it, but he was moving to Switzerland.
Right.
So they're like, okay, we need to train someone up. And they chose me. And I was like, well, maybe I'll get the hang of it. And I kept saying this for the 6 months that he was training me. And like, I'd see the bosses in the background. They'd be like, how's it going? I'm like, well, you know, I'm still sort of struggling to get the hang of it. And it, you know, they were nice guys. They were like, oh, don't worry, you're being hard on yourself. I'm sure you'll get it eventually. But like, you know, 4 months, 5 months ticked by and I was like, holy shit, this guy's going to leave. I don't know what I'm doing. And this company's going to collapse because of me. Like, I've gone back and visited those guys and the people who worked with me, not the bosses, were like, oh yeah, we knew you were struggling. Like, we'd ask you like a pretty basic question about like pricing and you'd go, let me see, look at this big thick book and then go, can't find the answer in here. I'm not sure. The Muck Putty job came along, did the test. And again, it had been a while since I'd animated it, so I was real rusty. And they're fairly, you know, detailed rigs. But I made sure that it was, like, my best work.
Did you like, reach out to any of the guys for, like, how to do it? Like, I was just too scared. Felt like I'd look unprofessional. What did you do? Did you do YouTube tutorials?
Actually, I got lucky. Once again, my parents helped me out.
Your parents helped you?
Yeah, get this. The reason that I knew about the job is because our friend who used to work at the studio, Ben Passman.
Yeah.
Passman, he went to the doctor's office where my mum works and they just got to chatting and mum said, oh yeah, my son does animation because he mentioned he was an animator. And so he mentioned this job and that they were looking for people. So I was actually able to reach out to him. I sent my test animation to him. He said, hey, it looks pretty good. Here are some things that you could change. The most important thing, and I've had to give this advice to people who want to work at Muck Putty and have sent in tests, I'm always like, dial back your acting choices. Like, people will always go for, like, they'll try to, like, hit a new pose with every new inflection. I'm like, just take it back.
Mm.
Choose a couple of, like, sensible acting choices and just commit to that, you know? It can't be super clowning acting all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, got the job there, and this was, like, month 5, week 3 into my training. I was like, oh, I got this job in animation, so I'm leaving. And, you know, understandably, they weren't that happy.
Oh, right, they weren't.
I mean, they weren't furious. In fact, they were sort of kicking themselves. They're like, he said he liked animation, yeah, and that's what he wanted to do. So they figured that I was going to walk eventually.
Yeah,
but it happens. And
man, you got the nice ending. I got chewed out for,
yeah,
for leaving.
What was the job again?
So I was essentially a dishwasher, but like a busboy. Busboy is just the term to sort of cover all the bases. So you chop the onions, you do all the chump work essentially, right, for the chefs, like, as well.
But then what loyalty do you have to a job where you're doing chump work?
Well, and you know, getting bucked at, yeah, you know, I'm just, yeah, like, I'm not going to get like too into it, but there was a night where I just hadn't had sleep. Like, I'd been working 7 days a week, yep, which is illegal.
Right.
And I'd been doing that for, I think, about 2 weeks. I'd been, you know, doing 12, 14-hour days. It was, it's brutal. It's brutal work. Like, it's, you really got to be built different or have no soul to do that. A lot of guys didn't last long doing that job anyway. But, I remember just sort of having a panic attack sort of one night. I was just like, just say, like, we, you know, like a wedding is a death sentence because you, of all the dishes you get back, you have to clean up for, like, I don't know, 1,000 people or crazy like that. Oh, that's what it felt like.
And a wedding, everyone wants everything perfect.
Yeah, and I was like to my manager, I was like, look, I had never done this before. I was like, look, I'm just really not feeling good. I just felt my body sort of just giving up on me. It was a really bizarre feeling. I was really scary though. I was like, I've never felt this before. And she was just like, well, no, you've got to do it. And I was just like, I don't think I will. So I just picked up my stuff and left. The next day, she's like, yeah, like just telling me off. Like it was like, I was back in school again. I was just like, okay. I was like, these people don't respect me. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I had no problem just being like, okay. Just a quick tangent.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Is it anything you want me to cut?
No, not at all. Okay, you can keep this in. It's funny. Cool. The head chef, we'd been through like a few of them, but this new guy had been on for about like half a year. I thought he was like a really good guy, and then turns out he wasn't. And he was just, you know, just business guy like everybody else. Doesn't really care.
Bottom line.
He goes, I want you to be the head bus boy. And I was like, great.
Yeah.
So more responsibility, that means a pay rise, right? And he goes, no. I'm not being head busboy.
Yeah.
You can shove your head busboy.
Yeah, happy it's been busboy.
Also, I've had friends in jobs that like it's, you know, not anything that they're passionate about, and they've turned down like those little mini promotions because they're like, I don't want to start climbing this ladder because then this is my career.
Exactly. You get. I was never going to be stuck in it. I was stuck in it because there was like no work at the time anywhere else in the city I was. So I was just like, it's reliable, it pays, it's awful. But I remember asking time off for a family emergency and they told me no. And I didn't end up going to that because I was like, well, I'm tied to the shop. I haven't got a roof over my head. I was just like, yeah, these guys kind of suck. So when I got asked to have an interview, I think the guys thought that I lived in Auckland City already, but I was like, no, I live in Wellington, I'll fly up for the interview. And Tim was like, what? No, don't do that. And I was like, yeah, it's no worries, I'm coming up.
Sure.
So I used the rest of my remaining money and flew up here. I told the head chef, it was on the day I was rostered on. I was just like, I went up to my head chef, I was like, look, man, I'm not coming in tomorrow. Like, I think I gave him at least a week. Mm-hmm. I said next Thursday, I'm not coming in.
Yeah.
I have an emergency to go to. And he's like, ha, ha, ha. No, I'll see you on Thursday. I'm like, no, I'm serious. Like, I won't be here. Like, I know I have to sign a little piece of paper that says I'm taking time off and it takes 2 weeks for you guys to process it, but I'm just not going to be here. It's important.
Yeah.
It's an important thing I'm going to. And he was just like, okay, really funny, but I'll see you next Thursday. And I was like, well, I'm telling you, I'm just letting you know. And so Thursday rolls around, I get the job.
Yeah.
So I'm, yoo-hoo! I treat myself, get a big hotel, you know what I mean?
Nice.
Fancy stuff, because I'd been living in a mushroom-infested house for like a year and a half. It was really rough living.
Jesus.
Starving artist stuff, you know, you gotta do it.
Mushrooms to eat though, right?
Plenty of mushrooms to go crazy with, you know, just forget you're living in a place to begin with.
Diced, minced, sautéed. How many ways can you do mushrooms?
Infinite source of protein.
There's something in mushrooms.
Yeah, something good. Got to be.
Living it up in a hotel in Auckland.
Yeah, the next morning I'm flying back, and I pretty much just taking the day off to explore Auckland and see the city. And he calls me at 10 o'clock in the morning when I'm supposed to be starting, and he goes, where are you? You're like an hour late. Why haven't you shown up yet? And I was like, I told you, man. I told you like three times I wasn't going to be here on Thursday, like last week. And he was just like, he's like, no, you're joking, you're like 5 minutes away, right? I'm like, no, I told you I'm just not gonna be there. Also, I got a new job, so I quit. And he was just like, you fucked me for the last time. And I was just like, oh, sweetie, don't be like that. And then he hung up the phone.
Wow, that's a lovely comeback.
And I'm walking on sunshine, like down Queen Street. Wow. I was like, yoo-hoo! Like, I just, you couldn't touch me. So
that is
good.
Awesome. That is awesome. Jesus, the fucking hubris of the guy with like giving you the like minimum. I'm assuming busboy is a minimum wage job.
I wasn't even making that because of how much they deduct. through student loan.
Oh yeah.
So I was getting really axed in taxes as well. I was getting axed.
You know what they
say?
I was literally walking around with $5 to my name every week living in the city I was.
I always tell people who work in those jobs, I'm like, hey, minimum wage, minimum effort. You know?
Exactly.
Like,
you don't get what you pay for.
You don't owe those people anything.
Yeah, that's right.
The minimum wage is like the legal amount they have to pay you. If they could, they would pay you less for this work. Yes. So do not feel any loyalty to them.
You know what? Let's name drop the
fuck this guy.
It's hard though when you're like young and it's like an early job and you kind of do think, oh, I have to like my... Again, it goes back to school. You think you have to impress your boss.
Yeah.
Which like you do when you've got a career.
Yeah.
But when it's a minimum wage job, it's like, no, it's impressive if you,
just,
show up.
You just have to show up and do the work that you're paid to do, and that's kind of it.
Right.
Yeah, and exactly. Also like listening to that story, I'm like... Whoever that person was, I was like, hey, buddy, you're a manager. It's your job to manage stuff. When someone says, I can't come in, your role is to be like, well, cool, we've got to find someone else to fill in. That's the only thing that you do. Do it. I think that's just the role
of the busboys. You're not nearly as respected as the rest of the staff.
Sounds like it.
I don't want to say like one job's harder than the other, but it's definitely like, you know, you put in just as much work as everybody else just because you wash dishes.
Well,
it doesn't
matter. Yeah, all work is work.
Every job is trading hours of your life for money.
Yeah.
Like there's enough money in the world. There's only a finite amount of hours in your life. So, you know, which is more valuable?
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's hour is as valuable as everybody else's hour. Mm. So, you know.
But that story's really quite like impressive because you were saying you didn't have a lot of money, like by any stretch of the imagination, like couldn't take time off to go to a family emergency. But, you know, this was what you wanted to do. You wanted to be an animator. This was the best job offer going. So you took the chance of flying up, leaving that job, spending what little money you had to come here.
I think I remember having help from my old man because I got the email, and this is the really scary part for the quote unquote starving artist sort of thing where you have like jobs like we did where it was, you know, either part time or something we just didn't want to do that was making us miserable. As when you do get stuck in it, you know, you're super reliant on it. And like you said, Simon, like you're trading time off your life for money. When I got the email saying, yeah, we'd like to meet you for an interview next week, I immediately was just like, oh, well, I'm working then.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I can't do it.
Yeah.
And I called my old man and I was just like, because I consolidate with him like a lot of like all this sort of stuff. And he's my bro, you know. We're like this, man. Yeah. And he was like, what the hell are you saying?
Mm.
Shut up. And I was like, what? And he's like, mate, this is it. You gotta take it. You gotta do it. Like, I'm like, well, what if I get fired? And he's like, then you get fired.
Yeah.
You find another job, but you gotta take it. And it's a really scary, like, sort of part of all of that is
when it's your first, if not your one of your first jobs, it's real easy to get into that mind space of like, this is my whole world now. I cannot disappoint my boss.
Yeah, for sure.
Being fired is the worst thing that could ever happen to me. And, you know, we're saying that a little bit sarcastically, but there is also the genuine problem of like, if I do not have money coming in, I can't pay rent and so on and so on.
I think that was definitely the biggest scare factor for me is that I just won't have a roof over my head.
So. Mm.
But
you rolled the dice and it all worked out.
And sometimes you just gotta.
And things have been going from strength to strength for you because now you started working here, but that's also, you know, having that consistent pay and, you know, learning a lot on the job. You've taken that and you've started your YouTube channel, which is like growing exponentially. You've got a little following happening.
Yeah, it was going all right for a time there. I think it's slowed down now. Mm-hmm. The algorithm's sort of changing all the time. But
Sort of work on like a schedule of like, when you have something, right?
Pretty
like,
much,
you're not just constantly forcing yourself to produce content
24/7. No, I think YouTube definitely has invented a model for itself where it incentivizes burnout from creators, and it's not like it used to be
back in my day.
But I don't ever want to sort of look at being a YouTuber as a job because I think as someone who does animation, it's not a reliable source of income and it's not a reliable job at all. So it's just good to like make stuff, get it out there, get their eyes on it. And
it's a very, very public platform that everyone knows how to find. Everyone can access it.
Yeah,
The animators that I know who are able to make a living and post their stuff on YouTube. It's through Patreon.
Yeah.
Like, YouTube does not pay enough.
It's all crowdfunded, yeah.
Fans like what they do, so they donate their money on a monthly basis or whatever.
I think that's the way to go. And I think leading into the future, like, with a lot of... I want to say, choose my words carefully here, but big networks are sort of... How do I say this?
Mm.
I don't think it's... I think the idea of pitching a show around and getting your big break isn't as reliable as it used to be.
Right.
And I think the time for that is always going to change. Like, it's just like a roller coaster. Like, you're going to get ups and downs, and like Netflix is going to put a big lot of money into animation, and then they're not. And so I think crowdfunding is definitely the... It's not the only way to go, but it's probably one of the more sustainable ways to go, as like a tip jar system to get things that you like seen funded, is just through the people and the people who watch it, like whether that's like $1 a month or $80 or whatever it is.
You can just get like, if you can get a million people to give you $1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
well, that's what I do. I give the minimum amount to all the people that I follow.
Right.
You know, I can spare a dollar each. It adds up to, like, at the moment, my bill usually comes to about 30 American dollars or something. Great. But
for a month.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it supports them making stuff that I already love.
Look at you, man, giving back.
You gotta get back. You gotta get back.
There you go.
One day, if I ever have a Patreon, I'm like, okay, I'm calling in all my favors.
Yeah, right.
I give you a dollar, you give me a dollar. This is like how an economy works, right?
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
As long as the dollars are moving around, that's
why it's called currency, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Moves like a current. I see where he's going. From what I listen to a lot of like podcasts explaining like how like animated shows get made, the histories of them, and you're right, half of it is just they happen to get there at the right time when a network or something that would fund an animated show wanted something. All those early Cartoon Network guys who have now sprung off to do, you know, a million different things, they just happened to be there, graduating at the right time. They had a short film or something that, you know, showed, here, I can make cartoons, and Cartoon Network was like, cool, right now we're looking for shows. Make us something, you know?
Nice.
It's the consistent story everywhere.
Yeah.
But the independent route, always been a lot trickier of a road to hoe, but something like Patreon crowdfunding has made it a lot more doable.
My thought is that good stuff just gets around naturally. Like, it does find its home, whether your idea of success is like millions or thousands, you know what I mean? It's kind of all up to the individual at the end of the day. But I'd say being on par with a studio sort of quality, maybe it can be done. I mean, you're seeing it now with a lot of YouTube pilots actually coming out in the past month.
Mm.
Really impressive. And it's a shame that there's not as much give back from audiences, from what I can see. Like, I think there should be more, but I think you've got to just make something that really sticks with people at the end of the day, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, part of it's luck, part of it's the product.
Yeah, I think too many creators sort of say like, yeah, man, I got here by luck, you know, it was all luck. It's like, that's not like entirely true. Like, you put in a lot of hard work. People put in a lot of hard work as well to get to where they are. Yeah, I think it's 50-50, but I think people say that they rely too heavily on it was all luck. It's like, no, it's not. Like,
yeah, don't sell yourself short. Somebody
have this wrong. Would they say that luck is when, I could have this completely wrong, when opportunity meets experience?
Okay.
Yeah,
right. I like that. Good. I like that. Add that
idiom to the list.
Yeah, I know, right?
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because like somebody else could come along, have that same opportunity offered to them, but if they don't have a worthwhile premise, then who wants it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you just won't get it. Like, the guy who has done the work is the guy who's going to get the opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Joel, I wanted to ask how do you make animating for yourself like different and exciting compared to what you do at MuckPuddy? Is the way that you animate different? Because I think when I look at your work, I'm seeing a lot more traditional stuff. Like, you don't just use the tween tool. You use it sometimes. I definitely will see some bits, but like if a character moves their hand or their mouth or their eyes or something, you're not just squashing and stretching symbols. You will actually just redraw it with the line weight intact.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the line art thing is just putting smoothing on animate to 100%, which not a lot of people do for a good reason, because it just tends to crash the program a lot. But that's the only sort of way I'm happy with
my work. It's the only way you get sometimes good line work out of Flash, in my experience.
And Tim gave me a good tip for that, actually. He's set up this, you know, there's this smoothing button.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like instead of turning up to 100.
Oh, you smooth it afterwards.
You just select the line and you hit the button.
Yeah, 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 yeah. True.
Well, Tim has that hotkey set for that command.
Right.
So when he draws, he just draws, hits it. So it's sort of automatically smoothening as he draws.
Okay. Yeah.
Without it being up to 100 all the time.
I do feel like I end up fighting with that a lot because like it will bloat your lines, or you get like a lot of people call like snail trails.
And shit like that.
So, it's okay. But I feel like, I don't know, I just... I'm gonna be honest, like I'm a little bit lazy.
Yeah.
I kind of put it like there are definitely projects that I'm working on right now which involve a lot more, it's a lot more strenuous, and I want to sort of be a perfectionist on those a little bit more, but for the most part it's just like this is an idea that I just won't get out. It's like a little like an earworm. I'm just gonna get out there.
How long would you spend on a cartoon? What's your, just looking at your the length. Yeah, you go about a minute and a half with a lot of these, so you know that's got to take some time.
I think the more the talky stuff, people call it, that's how you
fill it out.
Like the home movies bits are just kind of like a lot of it's just key poses, and then the lip sync for something for people to look at, so they're not completely complaining about this guy's a piece of shit. He's so lazy.
But like you choose your moments to draw something new well. Like I always think about the Batman one that you did, and like for a lot of that the mouth isn't moving, but you'll have a strong pose. But then if there's like a little inflection in the dialogue that's fun, like the bit where Batman is looking through his telescope and he's just giggling to himself, going, and then he just does one big like lean into the camera, and you animate that. You know,
I think that was definitely the laziest the laziest thing I've ever made. But I was just like, yeah,
that's
I love that movie so much. I was just like, let's just do something with that. So yeah.
I think we all got a kick out of that Batman movie.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. You liked the Batman movie?
I loved it.
Oh,
so it was great.
I don't hear enough people saying that.
I will admit it doesn't have as much replay value with a lot of like crime sort of stuff, where the whole point of the movie is, okay, what happens with the mystery? With me already knowing what happens, that movie is long. Yeah. Like on second watch, it was like it felt like 6 hours.
That was the hardest part going in. I'm just like, I'm sure it's going to be good, and sure enough, I did enjoy it. But I was like, 3 hours, boy, oh boy, oh boy.
It wasn't that bad on first watch. I'm not gonna lie, like it didn't feel that long.
I had the opposite feeling though. I felt on the first of all, I psyched myself up. I said, this is gonna be long. So I kind of knew when it was over. Like, and as soon as it ended, I went with Kurt and I turned it from. And I said, fuck, man, that was long.
Yeah,
but then I went to see it a second time because I liked it. You know, I'm always going to see a Batman in the cinema as much as I possibly can. But the second time, I was like, okay, I don't have to stress anymore. Like, is this Batman movie going to be good? Because if the Batman movie's not good, then it causes stress for me.
Okay,
so now I can go in. I can relax. I can enjoy this Batman picture because I know it's good. And I felt it went quicker the second time. Yeah.
I haven't quite heard, but like there's been a huge shakeup at HBO, you know, giant companies devouring other companies.
Yeah, at Warner Brothers.
Yeah, so there was supposed to be like a TV spinoff and a sequel film to follow this one.
Penguin.
Is that still happening? Is
Penguin's
it all gone?
Yeah.
And that was the TV show or the...
I think that Penguin was a TV show.
Ouch, yeah.
So that's gone. But that's not the Batgirl.
I heard about that.
That's the big one because that's finished.
That movie was finished, but they junked it for tax purposes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they could recoup all their
expenses. They just said it wasn't good enough to release and they'd make more money by.
I think them saying it wasn't good enough to release, they can say that if they don't put it out, you know? Yeah, and we just have to believe them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many shit movies put out that it's like, how bad was it?
Yeah.
You know? I'd like to have seen it, but yeah.
I hope they do more because the thing that I liked about this Batman, because, you know, I was going and I was like, this is like, it's like Spider-Man. It's like, this is like the 10th one. Like, how many more of these can we do? And it's starting again from scratch. So are we just going to see the same villains again? But what I liked about it was that it's Batman at the beginning of his career. and the Batman, that's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
He's like just starting out. I don't even think he's calling himself Batman yet.
No,
when he's beating out people, calls himself Vengeance.
Yeah.
And
he's just got pointy ears. It looks like a bat.
And he's figuring out what he wants to do. Like, people call him emo Batman because that's how he dresses. That's his vibe. And he's also clearly just still like, the pain of losing his parents is still very fresh to
raw,
him.
Isn't it?
Oh, like, boo-hoo, grow up,
because
like,
here's the thing. It happened to him when he was a kid. Like, he's a grown-up in this.
Okay.
Yeah, right? He's at least, like, late 20s or so, early 30s. Yeah. Like, come on, man.
Don't you remember being in your late 20s and all pissed off and depressed because you couldn't be a cartoon man?
I didn't build my whole identity around beating up strangers and mentally unwell people.
I know, but there's something wrong with that.
What I like about him, though, is that I don't think he should be idolized and he's grizzled and he's going to dark pass. It's like, I don't know, like,
I thought that this movie did it really well in that, though. He's not a well guy to go around. Yeah, he's clearly not well. He's clearly just as mad as the rest of them. The difference is he's a millionaire.
I know. Right? You know, I was just having this thought the other day. I was like, look, I know that everyone loves Batman. And so do I. Great character. But at least half of what people like about Batman is the set dressing, the tone, the mood, the neo-noir style, right? Yeah. And I was thinking about Superman and like why people don't like Superman as much. And I was like, you know, thinking about it, I think Superman's probably a more relatable character to me because he's trying to do his job, his everyday boring job, and he's also having to like give up his time to help other people, right?
Morally he cannot.
Yeah.
Like, he's got these powers and he can't just ignore that he's got these powers. Mm. But he does just want to be a normal guy.
He wants to be a normal guy, but he has obligations.
Yeah, I think Peter Parker, Spider-Man. I mean, I don't really care about the superhero stuff.
Honestly,
I checked out of it. But I think Spider-Man's the one I'm always sort of... Spider-Man and sometimes Batman is the one that I'm always going to go back to because Spider-Man's the best of both worlds. We've got the relatability, but people like to see him suffer. I don't know what's wrong with Spider-Man fans, but they're like at the end of... what was the one where...
No Way Home
or whatever it was. They're like, yes! Like, Marvel fans are like jerking themselves off. Because they're like, yes, he sucks! And it's just like...
No friends.
Yeah, he's miserable! Yes! I'm like, what's wrong with you, like, people? What the hell?
Look, it's not that I like to see him suffer. It's that we've had three movies of him having it real good. Like, I've got...
And all those movies are like that as well. Like, everyone just... Yep. Oh, it's happy ending at the end of the day, for the most part. And, like, it's good to be like, yeah!
If they're going to do three more... It's cool that they've changed up the status quo. We've had him being like, you know, the apprentice of billionaire Tony Stark. He has all this cool tech and stuff. Great
the suit
friends.
Just comes on whenever he wants, comes off whenever it's boring. Like
magic
like,
suit.
Yeah, let's see him poor. Yeah. You know, he has to get a job now.
Yep,
he lives in a crappy apartment.
It added some stakes to his character because, like, I liked those films. They were fun. They were poppy. They were light. They had cool villains. But I'm like, hey, if you're gonna do more, give me something else. Give me something new.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully they'll give us a Miles Morales one as well.
Yeah, maybe.
After Spidey in the Spider-Verse, we're all pretty much, except for Mike, we're all hungry for a live-action Miles Morales story.
Honestly, like, the MCU Spider-Man I like well enough, but, like, the new Spider-Verse movie, that's what I'm hanging out for.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that looks good, eh?
Even just that, the little preview clip that they put out, I'm like, yeah. I'm dying to see it. Because surely they must go like above and beyond even what they've done in the first one. Because they know we're all hungry. And
they delayed it by a year, I think. So, I mean, if anything, like, a lot of people will be upset about that, but I'm pretty happy about that. Because I think it should. Aren't they making two parts at the same time? Making one movie, but they're going to separate it into part one and two. Is that the case?
Okay, so they're making two sequels simultaneously.
Maybe. I don't know.
Sounds good to me.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Well, looking forward to it.
Definitely. Hey, I wanted to ask about just two little things that you've put up on your YouTube or your Twitter recently. They're sort of like, to me, they look like photo bash, like video game encounters.
Yeah.
The one I remember is the Peter Griffin one.
Yeah.
Peter Griffin encounter, where this horrifying Peter Griffin walks up to you, says some incomprehensible garbledy language, and kills you. And it's like game over. I wanted to ask, like, A, why? How did you think of this? What was the inspiration to do this? And then how did you do it? Because it looks crazy. It looks like you've taken a real person and mashed them into Peter Griffin. And also, like, the crazy language. What's going on? What's this all about? What's this new direction that Jolly Molly's going in?
I don't know. It's funny. I don't know.
It's as good an explanation as any.
It's not like me being like,
this is all I'm going to make now. This is it. This is the new status quo.
It's just like, I want to see if I could do it. You know? Like I did that other one a while ago.
What was the other one?
Catching up with a friend. I can't remember what it's called.
That's right.
Catching up with an old friend.
And that to me, I was like, okay, this is like your classic observational humor of like running into someone you haven't seen in a while. Yeah. Their life's taking them down a different path.
Yeah, that one was, I think, maybe like in retrospect, a little bit too wordy towards the end because it's so much happened. So I wanted to make like a bit of a shorter one. Mm-hmm. Initially, that was actually going to be a lot longer, and it was going to be like Peter Griffin breaking into your house while you're sleeping or something like that. Yeah, I made it with, I took a picture of the first shot I did with the, catching it with an old friend was just bits of my face.
Okay.
And then a bald man, head. And I just mixed it all together. I don't have Photoshop, but I made it all the pieces with Clip Studio.
Okay.
And I found, I was like, this is going to be really hard, but I actually found that Clip's got a lot of really good. You can cheat a lot. Like that's, I think my bag is I just like cheating everything that I can. And then it was essentially just exporting all the different pieces of the character as PNGs and then building it as a rig in Flash, which is the most time consuming part of it. But I put that, it's pretty much all done in Adobe Animate. And then the sound is just Peter Griffin's laugh, and I just messed around with it in FL Studio and made it sound distorted and weird. And why I made it, I don't know.
Wanted to try something different.
It looks like you're trying to keep it fresh for yourself, because you actually, like, the style lately has been changing.
Sometimes I just get a bit, I'll draw a lot, and then I'll be like, I don't really feel like drawing, but I feel like making something just... So it's just for me.
A new way of doing it.
It's not really.
That's the best way to do it, though, to make it just for you, though, isn't it?
It's always been about that. I think.
Yeah, that's how you kind of, because you definitely have like a unique voice with your animation, and I think that's probably the secret is like you're making them for yourself.
Oh, thanks, man.
And you know what you get for it? You get 26.9 subscribers. Let's just round up to 27,000 subscribers. On YouTube.
Yeah, where's my millions?
27,000. There's 27,000 little Jolly Molies out there.
they've all removed one eye. They've dyed themselves yellow.
They're part of a cult.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just I guess an escape from not drawing.
I saw on some YouTube channels they've got like a tip jar. You know, it's kind of like a Patreon.
Like a member or something like that. Hmm. I was a YouTube partner for a while, but I deactivated it because with your work monetized, if it gets demonetized or they find that it's not advertiser friendly, which is pretty much everything that I ended up putting up, or mostly all of it. They end up not showing your videos or recommending your videos to the wider public. So if you've got a video that's doing really well and it gets like seen by a lot of people quite quickly, it ends up not being discoverable at all. Like even to the point where you search it in the search bar, it won't come up.
Wow.
And it's not even on an age restriction or anything. It's just because it's demonetized. This is ridiculous. So I quit that. And I wasn't making any money from it anyway. Like YouTube makes all the money from the views that I get. So I got like a video with 1 million views.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everyone's like, you must be like raking it in.
Yeah.
And the way that YouTube works is the longer the video is, the longer time runtime, the more ads you can put on it, the more money you make. Yeah. So with my stuff, which is like, I don't know, 10-second video that had 1 million views, like I made like, I don't know, $6.
Right.
From that. Yeah, so
a million views.
I was like, what's the point?
So you need to be a hot chick doing unboxing videos that last about 15 minutes each.
How do you know what that is, Simon? Is it?
Well, I've heard about it.
Oh, okay. From a friend.
A friend named Simon. That's why like Let's Play videos are like the way that a lot of people go, because you can produce a lot of it and it lasts a long time.
That's right.
Lots of points for ad breaks. It's funny
that they're still like that. That's still really popular on YouTube. Like it did die for a bit, but it sort of... I think YouTube is a game of personalities at the end of the day. Like being an entertainer is kind of or a what do they call it?
Influencer.
But yeah, it's essentially like a personality or or sort of being, you know, best friend simulator.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it's like. And I mean, making direct money through YouTube is that's kind of the approach that you need to take, I think, for a lot of stuff.
Mm.
Or you talk about it all comes back to what's trending or what's popular. So if you talk about video games, you're really likely to do really well. Sparky personality.
Joining in a discussion that everyone's having.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. I think that's fair enough.
That's a lot of channels we watched that
is a dude who just plays Minecraft called Dan TDM.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally you know, he does half-hour-long videos of him playing Minecraft, but his personality is great.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, he's funny.
I mean, I put that stuff on in the background when I work. Like, there's no problem with it. Yeah. I have a problem with maybe the best friend simulator thing where there's, like, that
parasocial relationship,
which can get quite dangerous. But,
I know that a lot of, it's a thing that YouTubers do. They will actually lean into, like, talking to the camera, as if they're talking directly to you.
I love you. Please give me money.
Yeah, you're my best friend. Buy my bathwater. Mm. Whereas, like, I think the more responsible ones keep it clear that, like, I'm on YouTube. I'm doing my thing. We don't actually know each other.
Yeah.
And they don't do that by, like, saying that to the camera. But there's always just a clear implication that, like, I don't actually know the people behind the camera. And you don't know me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think probably that's, like, Joel, you don't really do that. You like to keep your life private. Like, the stuff on your channel is often, like, inspired by stuff that's happened to you or weird attractions that you have. But you're not ever going to go on camera and be like, yeah, I'm Joel. This is my day. This is what I'm doing. Hi, bestie. This is where I live.
Maybe at one point in little Joel's career, when the vlogging thing was huge.
Mm. Did you do some vlogging?
No, but I really considered it for a long time, and then I was just like... And then I think I just got to a point where I was like, that's a really bad idea. That sucks.
Yeah. So, all the information about yourself.
No, and the thing is, it doesn't need to be known. Like, no one cares. And especially with what I do, the point of it is the videos itself. So, like, in my opinion, it's like, no one cares about what I'm up to. And I think at one point or another, I wanted to dip into maybe the personality bit a bit more with, like, streaming, because that's how you make it, is mm-hmm. being a live streamer, is sort of people aren't necessarily coming for you to play the game. It's more for the...
to hang out with the man behind the curtain.
Yeah,
pretty much. And I mean, like, some of that stuff's fun to do sometimes, but it's also exhausting.
Mm.
I don't know how the fuck people do it for, like... People are contracted to do, like, 14-hour days, days a week.
And you can't take time off for anything like that.
And I think the content suffers for it. Oh, sorry, I used that word, but...
It is what it is.
The
quality of what they're doing.
The entertainment suffers for it, I think, significantly, because but that's kind of what... I refuse to play the game, man. There's a game with online stuff, and, you know, I think, to go on a small tangent, a lot of people sort of feel like they're owed success because they're ticking all the boxes and what they're told to do that, like, makes them successful.
If you do these things online, if you have a channel, you do the call to action, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And a lot of people sort of verbally express the fact that they're upset. They're like, why is that not me?
Yeah.
Why is it not? And it's like, well, you got to make something that people are going to like. Like, that's it at the end of the day.
Sad thing is, like, I do see a lot of channels, like, imitating what is successful with other people. But, like, the personality just isn't there. Like, sometimes you've just got to acknowledge, you're like, I'm just a guy, you know?
I mean, there's nothing wrong with, like, keeping on trying. I've had people tell me, like, you're just not cut out for this comedy stuff. And I'm just like, no, fuck you. I'm going to keep doing it.
I think what I'm doing is funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say maybe give up, but just definitely diversify and be inspired by different things. Like, it's a hard game to play trying to... the other way I look at it, too, is, like, if you want to be... successful, quote unquote, I think a lot of people mean, like, million subscribers or million followers or whatever you want to say. Like, it's like, why do you want that in the first place? Like,
yeah, what do you get for that?
Yeah, it's you get, like, from what I've seen from everyone else online who's eventually got what they've always wanted, they don't even want it in the end anyway, because they end up getting harassed by people constantly.
Yeah, that's it. In the meantime,
I don't want that.
Lost their anonymity in the world.
You do see that happen a lot.
People just get weird.
Somebody gets, like, really famous, and it's not just through being a YouTuber, but through anything. Mm. And then the parasocial people or put them on a pedestal.
Yep.
Which is the most dangerous thing you can do. You put someone on a pedestal, and then the longer you do that, the higher that pedestal gets. And then when they, you know, they make
the slightest mistake.
When they make a mistake. Now, I'm not talking about like going mask off and revealing like I'm part of a hate group or something. That's different. But like they will just say something slightly off, or they'll do something that the optics aren't very good. And then the people are just, you know, the sheep grow fangs, you know, suddenly like, and now I can't wait to tear this person apart, you know?
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if I want to keep this in, but like I'm seeing it happen with Taika Waititi. Like for a long time, he was the internet's...
Do you think he deserves that?
He was the internet's precious little bean.
Yeah.
I'm like, he made some fun movies. He's a funny guy and he's clearly enjoying his success. And why would I begrudge him that? But now, I don't know. I don't know exactly why, but I'm seeing a real shift. Everyone is suddenly deciding like, you know what? I'm sick of this guy.
And it always happens. And I can't for the life of me understand why people aren't acknowledging or being self-aware that we're just going through the same cycle with everybody. New guy on the block, a rich, famous, successful. Everyone's praising him. And then as soon as, you know what? This motherfucker's been in the spotlight for too long. Let's tear him down. Why?
And it is also, I'll see people comment and say like, you know what? He just stayed around too long. You should have gone away. I'm like, why? He's an artist. He wants to keep making stuff.
Yeah.
He should go away and stop making stuff because you're sick of him. You know what you could do? You could log off and not look at what they're doing very easily. Yeah.
Easily. So, I mean, definitely in the past few years, I've just decided to... I used to be quite involved in sort of the online space, but I'm just like, it's just isn't as fun as it was. Yeah, you know, it used to be just like, used to be the Wild West, used to be a bit more fun. You could kind of, I don't know.
And so when you say everyone's just mad, engage, is that like commenting and answering people's comments and that sort of thing?
Yeah, a little bit like that too. I mean, I do respond to like a lot of people send me messages and I get back to them. If I feel like people want help with something, like I tend to lend a handout or just say, hey, what's up? But it doesn't go beyond that. Like that's just a matter of the, not even a relationship, but you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I think that should be how, not just me, I think that should be treated for everybody. Yeah. It should be. Yeah.
Well, because the main thing is like, I mean, you could spend your whole time, you know, engaging online and, you know, sort of pushing your like product and all this sort of thing. Mm. But really, that's not you doing what you want to do. You want to make these funny little cartoons. And if you make that your goal, that's success. It's there. You're getting
well, exactly.
It.
Yeah, you've exactly. got to. You've got to. Everyone's got to define success for themselves.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you've got a healthy number of subscribers, and I look in the comments, and every time you put up something new, everyone's going like, "Yes, new Jolly Moly!"
Yeah,
because these are the people who want.
You're
to
so
see
humble
what you're
about
doing.
That, though. It's like you don't like to talk about it.
Right. I mean, like, look, it is. I'd be lying if I said it wasn't cool.
Yeah.
But
right.
I just don't. I don't think. It's weird. I don't feel like I'm in a position to be like, hoorah. Just yet.
Right,
like
right,
to me,
right.
to me, it's not.
So when, like,
it's not right.
When
you arrive, you don't know you've arrived.
I think I'll be pretty content if I can get to a place where I can comfortably do what I do with enough money to just get by.
Yeah,
like if I'm at a position, but I just don't have, in my opinion, I just don't have the notoriety yet or the, I haven't made anything worth of people's time yet. In my opinion, like something that, you know, like whether that's like a series or something I've noticed is, you know, I think everyone wants to sort of, not specifically, but they want to make something like the next Undertale or like a, you know what I mean? Like when an indie thing pops off and becomes like super popular, like,
They want to have like their work to have like an impact, be a new thing that people are amazed and excited by.
Yeah. Mm. And so I think if you get to a spot like that, then that's kind of that's where I'm wanting to hit anyway. Just want to
and also what you were saying before about like people who, you know, chasing success that they've seen other people have doing, like being contracted to do 14-hour streams. I'm like, then aren't you back in the same boat as, like, you know, working 14 hours as a busboy? I mean, it's different work, but you're still selling a hell of a lot of your time.
But then those people don't even like doing that at the end, and they go, I quit, I'm going back to what I've always wanted to do. And then, you know, whether that's a lot of YouTubers end up doing music, for example, instead of making silly comedy sketches. Or I think the perfect example of that is Joji or even Bo Burnham,
right,
who went from, you know, Bo Burnham's a bit of a different case because he was actually doing, he's doing what he's always wanted to do as a kid, but doing as a job now. That's, he's not a, he's not looked at as a YouTuber anymore. Whereas I think the Joji guy was making these like really weird sketch comedy videos that were like, by the end of it, he was like, I'm a bit done with this. But that was the thing that was like making him money, and then he ended up transferring over to doing music. So,
right.
I think you should just
money from his sketches that he can just sit back and relax and make his music now. Or
what do you mean?
Joji.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know him, but is he like? Did he make enough money off YouTube?
Yeah, he was for a time, but then I think he was really lucky because I think some of the stuff he was making was a bit more riskier than. At a time where YouTube was allowing that, but then he jumped the boat to being a pop star, like right as YouTube was sort of canning all of that, so he got really lucky. But
I was gonna say, like, the scariest thing is the alternative, and you end up as someone like the Nostalgia Critic, who started off doing this one thing, like, I'm gonna shout and scream and joke about movies, but then tried to go off the beaten track and do something a little bit, I don't know, a little bit more adventurous or different, but people were like, no, we want you to keep doing the thing. So they acquiesced to that, and now that's just what that dude's gonna do forever.
Yeah,
like I was thinking about it, I was like, I'm just thinking about like this guy when he's 60, he's still gonna be screaming and ranting and raving and shooting guns in the air talking about this Care Bears movie's terrible. Like, is he gonna be able to retire doing that? I don't know. I don't want to judge him too harshly, but from looking at what he's doing from the outside, I'm like, that seems scary. Getting locked, having success, doing something,
locked into it,
and then just getting stuck with it. Just being like, well, I guess this is just who I am now.
I think just from the get-go, just doing what you want to do in the beginning and just sticking to it. And like, the money might not come, but maybe it will, maybe it won't. You know what I mean? But like, to get stuck in your own head about, you know, you guys, like, people would like my stuff so much better if... you know, I was drawing big boobies.
Right. Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
of course. Yeah. Like, six sales. Yeah. Six sales always sold. Like, don't like rag on other people's sort of like way of doing stuff.
I've had
like,
people suggest to me, like, you know, you could be making a lot of money if you drew furry porn. Like, I have no doubt.
Yeah.
But A, I'm just not that interested. And I don't want to insult the people who want that. I think they'd be able to tell that I wasn't into it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Did you find though, that when you have a talent or a skill, that people are always telling you how to make money off
it. Yep. Oh, yeah, of course. Yep. 100%. I'm always getting people saying, you should be a teacher. Right. Why would I be a teacher? I've given up then. No offense to teachers. There are people who genuinely want to be teachers out there, but there are a lot of people who do that as a way to be like, well, I know this thing. It's a way to make money until something else comes out.
And also, teaching in itself is a skill. Like, just because I've seen it before, just because you know how to do something doesn't mean you are an effective communicator enough to teach it to a class full of people.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah.
But even like I used to do caricatures of pop and rock artists, which would get published in a magazine.
Yeah.
And people would see it and say, you should do wedding portraits. Mm-hmm. You make a lot of money off that. And I'm like, I would hate to do wedding portraits.
Like a non
sort of artist client who cares too much about your work.
They're so insistent on you. They're like you're offending me if you don't take me up on this offer to do the thing I've suggested.
I've had people say, like, you should be doing XYZ on Instagram, and then you could get like a sponsor and stuff. And I was like, look, you mean well, but the stuff that I make, nobody's going to sponsor me to make this stuff.
Right.
I'm doing it because I like it. It's not advertiser friendly or whatever. Yeah. And I wouldn't want it to be like that anyway. I wouldn't want to be pumping out work just so I could, I don't know, be sponsored. And then, like you say, if you don't take their idea, they take it personally. Yeah. It's like, well, then you do it.
Well, they think you're a fool. You're just like, you're just turning up good money.
You're wasting your talents. It's like, no, I'm doing what I like.
It's not what I developed my skill for.
Hey, Joel, I wanted to talk to you about, you mentioned caricatures.
Right.
I've been watching Nathan For You, Nathan Fielder's comedy show.
Yeah.
There's like a 7-hour block on Comedy Central's YouTube channel that's just like 7-minute clips from the show. It's not always a full episode, and sometimes it'll cut off and be like, oh, I wanted to see how that flim flam continued. But there was a guy who I was watching yesterday.
What's it called? Nathan
For You. He's this comedian, real deadpan. He's like the male Tina Belcher from Bob's Burgers.
Oh, love
like
it.
If she came to life.
Well, Tina Belcher is a...
I know. Yeah. But if they were like that all the time in real life. And they're super deadpan. And their thing is like they quote unquote help businesses by making suggestions of how they could make money. And it's basically, it's kind of a prank show. Like, it's not just like a surprise, a thing bursts out of the wall and gives you a fright. It's like a long con of like, what will these people go with and do? Yep. The thing that I've caught from it is like, wow, people really want to be on TV and will do almost anything because they're on TV. Like, this guy will be making insane suggestions and they'll just be like, oh yeah, okay. And you can tell in their mind, they're questioning whether or not this is like, makes sense or will get them in trouble. But they're like, I mean, I guess they wouldn't let me do this if I was on TV. I'm on TV. I don't want to like cause trouble. I don't want to lose out on the chance to be on TV by questioning it too much. And then he just gets them to do the craziest stuff. The caricaturist guy.
I saw that one. Yeah
Nathan was saying like, I can't do a good impression, but he's like, your work is interesting, but it's not funny. I'm not laughing when I look at it. You know what is funny? Insult comedy. You should start doing mean caricatures.
He does the most heinous stuff imaginable. I know.
This dude goes from 0 to 60. Like the first one he does is of himself, the caricaturist, banging this guy's girlfriend in front of him.
The guy's looking at a woodpecker, being like, looking at his the woodpecker's penis, and he's just like, "Wow, that's pretty bad."
And you're like,
"I was like, where did he come up with that?"
That's
like,
already far enough. But then the next one he does two. He's like, "Just give me a little taste of some mean caricatures." The second one he does is the most heinous caricature of an Asian person you've ever seen in your life.
Right, yeah.
You're like, "Wow!" But then the incredible part is, he goes out to the beach and starts doing it, and everyone he does a portrait of loves it.
Yeah, so it completely backfires on him, right?
Is that because there's cameras, or...?
I don't know. It might be a bit of both,
something to it?
Yeah, there was some people who were like,
I'm not so sure
like,
about that.
A lot of the couple, like, it was really, it wasn't even like, it was malicious.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like funny mean.
These were hatchet jobs, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And like, but then the great bit at the end is Nathan goes like, why don't you do one for me?
Yeah. So he's like, be as mean as you want, no breaks, just go all out. And he does one of him. And I think it's like something really innocent, like his grandfather's watching Nathan from heaven being like, I'm really disappointed in my grandson. He's like, you went too far, man. way to end the day on a sour note. And then he leaves.
Yeah. he's such a little stinker. Funny. But, it's really funny. Some people have been like arguing like, is this too mean? Is this manipulative? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. What he's doing is manipulative, but that's the show.
Right. I'd have to see the show, but
you really do.
At the end of the day, isn't it all like, it's TV.
Yeah.
It's not real.
But also, these people know what they're signing up for a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, not entirely, but like, they're also like, it's the fact that I think it's the deadpan delivery, which gives across the everyday Joe, like I'm the marketing consultant, and people just go, okay, I choose to believe this guy because he's not saying it to me in this bombastic way.
When yeah.
That's in reality what a lot of the solutions are for
the
business.
Yeah, he never breaks. And like the stuff he's able to coax out of people will tell him like the most insane things about their lives you could imagine. And he will just respond by going, oh, okay.
I like though that I've noticed there's this one episode I watched where there's like a, and I've looked back on some of the other ones, so I was like, there's like a hint of like genuine humanity in some of these episodes too, which is actually really surprising.
And sometimes the businesses work.
Yeah.
Like there was a woman who was a realtor and she was struggling, so he suggested she become a ghost realtor and become like a medium as
that,
well.
That one was scary though at the end. Like,
yeah. She gets an exorcism. It's crazy.
But I think he was genuine there when he was like, are you hurt? Because she's like really overreacting to this guy exercising a ghost out of her. Because she's like screaming.
But they did a follow-up and she's still a ghost realtor.
Yep. That's him.
And she seems to be having, be having success. And right. I was like, I think Nathan ruined this woman's brain. Like, I think she was just like a fairly normal woman, but who like maybe had some like ideas about like ghosts and the supernatural. And now that he has made her lean into being a full-time ghost person,
some sort of cult leader in a couple months.
She now just believes in like the craziest stuff. Wow. She's gone down a rabbit hole. Someone was talking about, I can't remember what it was, but like psychic mediums, right? Like the way they do that cold readings. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before. I'm sure I've told this story before, but Orson Welles, the director, he loved magic, loved all kinds of stuff. He wanted to just try being a psychic medium. And the way that he does it is, you know, he just makes observations about people, but he says also people tell you what they want to hear. Like, they will tell you information about their lives. You repeat it back to them and they go, wow, I can't believe you knew that. But your brain does begin to get better at it as you do it. Like, he was picking up things about people that he wasn't sure how he knew. And he says he quit the day that somebody walked in and he said, your husband died. And this woman burst into tears because that had happened. And he said, don't know how I knew that. Something about her obviously clued me in, but my brain was subconsciously picking up on this. I didn't know what about it led me to that conclusion. But he said, I had to quit because if I had have kept doing it, I would have started to believe that I really was psychic,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think this happened with this woman.
She didn't have the restraint of Orson Welles.
No, to walk away. Yeah, yeah. And again, Nathan Fielder is egging her on, be like, yeah, no, I think you should. You should be a ghost, a ghost realtor.
I have just come across the caricature of the Asian person.
Yeah, Nathan didn't ask him to do that.
Wow. Yeah, he just did it on a whim. Something in him. He's like, just be mean, because people like mean. And that's all he said.
Yeah, wow. And yet sometimes the people really go with it. Like, I can't.
You know something, though? There's something to that. Because, like, that was my big problem with when I was doing caricatures. It's like, you know, especially, okay, I will admit I did a lot of corporate ones as well.
Yeah.
Where
flatteratures.
Flatteratures is right. And that's a problem. Because you can't do a good picture if you're just trying to make it look
I can't remember what show it was on, but like some show was like making fun of caricature artists and they're like, hey, do you like go-karts? And they're like, no. It's like, do you like rollerblades? Everybody likes rollerblades.
Simpsons, everybody
is just in a go-kart or rollerblades.
I have to show you send you guys, there's these two girls in Hawaii that do a sidewalk caricatures,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, they're nowhere near as bad as the stuff that guy did on Nathan For You, but they're mean,
yeah,
but they're like funny mean, like, right. You know, the big foreheads, like,
yeah,
like good, like genuinely good characters, they color them and stuff, and
yeah,
it's all really good. And I think that's the first time in a long time where I've like seen, because I think caricatures are kind of just a little bit dead. Well, like, they were really a huge thing back in like 10 years ago.
There's a huge like swath of them. It's like newspaper cartoonists. Like, they all draw the exact same way. I feel like most caricaturists get away with it by, they just exaggerate everything. Like, they're not really making any like observations about a face. They're just like, just draw this person up with a big nose, big ears, big head.
Yeah. But the person might not even have a big nose.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm just making things longer. It's
Then most people just like enjoy it because just the novelty of hey, it's me as a drawing.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a big thing.
There's more stuff to talk about, but just another reason to have Joel back yet again.
Yes. Yeah, you'll come back again.
Yeah, especially if this one screws up too.
Yeah.
But even if
this sorry guys, none of this was recording. This is this is a shoebox. This isn't a podcast device at all.
At some point, I'm going to find out this isn't a podcast at all. This is just here for my vanity, right? To make me think I'm on a podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah,
we were ghosts or something.
Yeah.
Get the ghost realtor.
Yeah.
All right. I'm Josh Marchant. You can find me at Joshua Martian. That's me on Twitter, MARTIAN, or JoshuaMartian_art on Instagram, where I'm actually putting up art again. Thank you to my iPad. I've been posting, I think I'm nearly out of them, but I've been posting drawings of bad taxidermy that we found at the museum.
They're so funny. I'm loving them so much.
They've been a lot of fun.
They come up on Twitter and Instagram
and
on Slack, and I'm hitting like on all of them.
Thanks, you know,
even I like the monkey one. That looks 2D.
Yeah. Well,
it did look like him. I was just like, oh, yeah, you're right.
They're a lot of fun because like you see my wacky drawing and then you swipe to see what the actual thing is. You're like, oh, yeah, I wasn't kidding.
It's funny.
That is a fucked up looking lion.
I already look. Yeah, you laugh at the drawing. And it's, I agree with you. Like, I laugh at your drawing first. In the way I'm supposed to laugh at it.
Good.
And then I scroll over to the photograph. Taxidermy's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, what is it about it? It's like this.
Were you in Te Papa when you...
This was in Otago Museum.
Oh, okay.
They have a whole animal attic.
They've got some pretty bad ones in Te Papa.
And look, they've got some normal-looking animals too. But you're like, okay, that's cool. That's an anteater, for sure. But then some of them you're just like, what the hell did you do to that
face? They've got like teddy bear eyes and shit like that.
Yeah. Glass eyes. And then just like...
The mouth always looks wrong.
I know.
I can never get that right. I guess for like ferrets and like stoats and stuff.
They're like, so I don't actually know what like a resting stoat face looks like. So I'm just gonna take a guess and give it this
erectus grin.
Yeah, this horrible grimace.
Look like, yeah.
So having a lot of fun. Simon, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Sikifondue, SikyFondue. And I will post this week. I have a picture of Batman that I'm happy with.
I'm excited to hear
that. Yeah. I had this thing where I've been drawing Batman for decades, and I'm like, I've never actually drawn a good one though. You know, they're all shit pictures of Batman.
So you were like, what if I drew a good one?
Well, that's what I did. I said, okay, let's just say I was going to do a Batman comic, and I had one picture of Batman to draw.
Mm.
I got to make it look like a comic picture. So I've drawn it. That's going to go up on Instagram. I'll put it up tonight.
I'm excited. By the time people hear this, they will be able to see that.
It'll be up. Yeah, it's a yellowy. It's just yellow and black Batman.
Interesting. Classic.
Yeah.
And Joel, where can people find you on the internet?
Pretty much Joely Moly everywhere. So.
And that's Joely. Joely, and then Moley.
That's the one.
Nice.
Yep.
So that's you on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. Well, most of the places.
Most of them, I think there's like slight differences.
I love when your stuff goes up. It's always very funny. I do hope people will go and look at this stuff.
God bless you, Simon. You're a sweetheart. Yeah.
Pass it on.
It's worth it. Subscribe, and then every so often, a sweet little nugget of comedy will show up in your.
Thanks for having me, boys.
Thanks for coming back. Time. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Tune in next week where we will be talking with more amazing talent from our studio. And until then, keep mucking around.